This is Karen Testerman with Smart Girl Politics, and we have on the phone with us Brad, and I keep butchering your last name. I'm sorry.
It's real easy. Brandon. Two first names. Brad Brandon.
Well, it's really funny because I would go back as I was looking up information on you and so forth. I would go back and I'd mistype it every time. So it's not any help. I did that as well. But Brad is a self-identified libertarian conservative and a blogger, a radio host, and a senior pastor from Minnesota. Minnesota, as we would say every once in a while. But, Brad, we were talking about the Supreme Court and the fact that they have sort of become a lot more influential than they were ever intended to be. It was, I think it's David Barton that said that they started out in the closet of the Capitol and points out that they started in that little room. And then he says, but then they built this Taj Mahal behind the Capitol, and now they have all the power in the world. So what was the original intent of the court system?
Well, I think the original intent of the court was to basically, I mean, every judge takes an oath, just like Congress does and presidents do, to defend the rule of law, the Constitution of the United States. And it, as we talked in the last thing, we've moved way beyond that now. Now we're into policy implementation and all kinds of other things and agendas, to be quite honest with you. Because if you look at just the simple example of the publicity of the United States Supreme Court, take over the last 30 years. If you go back 30 years, the Supreme Court was largely unknown. They never did interviews. They never talked in public. They rarely were ever seen. Nobody even knew who they were, really, unless you were a lawyer or studied that. And now we've seen this massive shift, particularly, I would say, in the last 10 years, that the Supreme Court has become much more public and influencing public opinion. And I can say with certainty, and I think, Karen, you would absolutely agree with this, that it was never the intent of the United States Supreme Court to try to influence the publicity at large. It was simply to, as we mentioned before, defend the Constitution of the United States and make sure that the rule of law was not fair. You look at this and you think to yourself, well, the Supreme Court's there to make sure everything's fair. Life is not fair. That's just the way it is.
And, rains on you no matter what.
Right. I'll make this statement, too, which I often make just for the pure shock factor, but we are not equal. People are not equal, and I know that goes against everything that we're taught today, but we're not equal in finances. I know people who have more money than I do in the bank. I know people who have less money in the bank than I do. We're not equal in intellect. I know people who are smarter than me. I know people who are more skilled in areas of art than I am. We're not all equal. And I think that this whole idea of equality has really hurt particularly the legal system, the judicial branch, if you will, because people then think that, and that mindset sort of enters into the court itself, that they're there to make sure everybody's treated fairly and treated equally.
Well, don't you think,
and I
Brad?
I think that's bad.
Well, don't you think, though, Brad, that that comes about because of the changed perception of what their role is? Like, as you mentioned before, they started instead of always referring back to Blackstone or to the Bible, quite honestly, for the basis of their rulings, they started in on this idea of precedence and what was said before.
Yes.
So you could have a ruling that in essence was in error, but because it was said precedently, it was then taken as the rule of law and interpreted that it reinforced. I mean, a lie repeated often enough becomes a perceived truth.
Right. You're absolutely right. Our courts used to refer, not to previous law. As I mentioned before, before that evolutionary mindset entered into the judicial branch in the late 1800s, I mean, our courts used to refer back to William Blackstone, as you mentioned, used to refer back to great lawyers of Roman times and Grecian times, and we would often refer back to those sources and not laws that had been previously decided, which could be flawed. And I think that also could bring up the whole idea then of the mindset then entering into society that our rights are derived from the government. And I think that has also been a factor in this. Talking about William Blackstone, he was William Blackstone, who, by the way, was adamantly opposed to the revolutionaries here in the United States. He was vehemently opposed to them. But yet every revolutionary had read his ideas on natural rights and natural law, and they knew that like the back of their hand and made that a very intricate part of the Constitution. So there's an interesting irony there that he was so opposed to the revolutionaries, but yet the revolutionaries loved his writings.
Well, and respected what he had to say. But the other part of it is, I know that there have been presidents in the past who have said to the Supreme Court, the ruling that you've just come out with is in disagreement with what I morally believe and or that I think is the correct interpretation, and they've said, thank you very much for your opinion. And I think that many of us have forgotten that it is, that's all the courts are supposed to do, is offer an opinion.
Well, and that's a great point, and I really like and appreciate that point, because at heart, I'm a fighter, and I think that so many Americans have lost that fight within us to fight against things that we see that are wrong. And I love presidents and public officials who are willing to stand up and say just those very things. I disagree with you, and therefore I am going to fight against that. I love the idea of states, individual states, standing up and saying, well, we're not sure if we're going to go along with this whole health care thing after all. I mean, that kind of stuff is what built America and made it great. And so I'm glad that you brought that up.
Well, and in essence, too, not that you want the military people, you know, whether it's the airman or the soldier out on the field, you don't want them to turn around and be out of line and not to do their orders when they're supposed to. But
right. It
is clear in the Military Code of Justice that if you think your commanding officer is giving you an immoral command, it is your responsibility and your duty, and we're getting back to personal responsibility, to stand up and not follow the order.
Yeah.
So, Likewise, we as Americans, if we are really going to be true to our founding fathers, need to stand up and say when we are facing tyranny, when we are facing an illegal order from whether it be the court or the commander-in-chief or the mayor, we need to stand up and say what you're ordering is wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I was giving a speech for the Tea Party here in Minnesota a couple.
Oh, you're not one
ago.
Of those people, are you?
Well, I was giving a speech for them just because. I mean, I think that there's other issues there too, but I was giving a speech to them and on liberty, because again, that's kind of my issue is individual liberty and responsibility. And I ended the speech, and this is where it ties into what you were talking about. I ended the speech with a prayer in which I basically said, God grant us the strength and grant us the courage that if needed, if pressed, we would be willing to refresh the tree of liberty if needed. And anybody who knows Thomas Jefferson knows what that meant. And that meant, God give us the strength that if at all necessary, as a last resort, give us the strength to refresh the Tree of Liberty, in which Thomas Jefferson said that the Tree of Liberty needs to be refreshed by the blood of patriots and tyrants from time to time. And I think that the talk of that is starting to rumble. I'm hearing people talk of, I'm actually working on an article right now of a justified revolutionary theory, and that basically answers the question, when do we come to the point where we start a revolution like our founding fathers did? And that's getting into dangerous territory. I mean, that's getting into areas where people aren't comfortable talking about that kind of stuff.
Well, certainly, and we forget that our founding fathers really were treasonous if you really looked at where they were in relationship to the king. And
They were going to die.
Yes,
they were going to hang because they were treasonous against their country.
Exactly. But, you know, one of the things that I noticed one of your articles was about Christians getting involved in politics. And we have this problem where we have leaders in our churches, and sometimes it's not the pastor so much as it is the board of directors, the deacons or whatever that say,
yeah,
that's politics. And they've attached this word to action that seems to be out of the concept of what their leader, Jesus Christ, did. I mean, he was counterculture, wasn't he?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And the interesting thing about that is, as I was working on the marriage campaign here in Minnesota, I saw two things. I saw two points of resistance when it comes to churches. I did see pastors who were very reluctant. They had bought in this idea that Christians can't be involved with politics. But I also did see pastors who were willing to get involved, but then they would come back to me and say, well, you know, our board just isn't comfortable with me getting involved with politics. But here's one thing that I did not see ever once in all the churches that I talked to and all the traveling that I did around the state of Minnesota. I never saw the people in the church not wanting to get involved. In every church we went to, the people themselves, apart from the pastor and the board of directors, they were willing to get involved, and they saw the value of getting involved. And I had just recently, I think about a month ago, given a lecture at a Christian college here in Minnesota on Christians getting involved with politics. And one of the things that I brought up in this was that infanticide, which is the killing of infant children, was a largely accepted practice in the Roman Empire shortly after the church was around. You're talking a second century, and it was largely practiced. I mean, just like abortion today, there were emperors who wrote letters saying, "Well, we should kill children who are abnormal, who are sickly. We should kill them before they're a cost on the government," and so on and so forth. So this is widely accepted. But it was the early church, and I actually have copies of letters that early Christians wrote to governors and leaders, and even one wrote to the emperor himself, and said, this has to stop. And so they took measures, the early church did, took measures to stop that and put a stop to that. And so it was Christians getting involved with something that they saw was wrong that ended infanticide. And even from that point till now, every culture, by and large, has looked at infanticide as a horrible, awful practice. And I think it's largely due to those Christians, those early Christians who stood up and said, we're not going to tolerate this any longer. This is wrong and it's evil. And they got involved and put a stop to it. You look at William Wilberforce, who essentially single-handedly, there'd be an argument made for that, yeah, ended slavery in the British Empire. You look at much of the revolutionaries were charged by pastors getting up from behind their pulpits talking about natural rights and natural law. That sparked a revolution which gave birth to the greatest nation on the face of this planet, which has given freedom to, I think I've counted all that have been born in this country since then, about over 2 billion people. And there's people who risk their lives just to hold up the soil of the United States in their hands to get here to have freedom. You look at during the Civil War, it's the same thing. It was pastors talking about that. Even Martin Luther King with the Civil Rights Movement, a Baptist pastor. I mean, wherever Christians go and wherever they choose to get involved, they not only bring freedom for themselves, but they bring freedom for everybody that's around them.
Which is why it said that America was made for a moral people. Well, Brad, I really have enjoyed this conversation. How do people get in touch with you if they need to?
Well, they can email me if they want to get in touch at brad@wordoftruthradio.org, or they can go to my website, wordoftruthradio.org.
We've been talking with Brad Brandon, a self-identified libertarian conservative and a blogger, radio host, and senior pastor from Minnesota. A loyal patriot and follower of Jesus Christ, Brad has devoted his life to stand for the truth in a world when the truth is not a popular thing. Our second president, John Adams, stated, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. While it establishes freedom of religion, why would it be wholly inadequate to the government of a non-religious people? Our Constitution simply states that it was ordained to secure the blessings of liberty to succeeding generations. Is our constitutional liberty derived from the morality and religion? And what is liberty? How is it defined? Is it the same as freedom? Well, liberty is based upon certain principles, like the knowledge and application of which are required to fully comprehend and uphold liberty. It has been said that a principle is not like a rule. The rule asks nothing more of you than that you obey. A principle, on the other hand, requires you to do your own thinking. A rule gives you credit only for being a creature. A principle gives you stature. Our founding fathers and the founding documents they authored have relevance and stature because of their principles. These principles form the basis for the raising up and establishment of our form of government, which was designed to secure the blessings of liberty to us and our posterity." This has been Karen Testerman with We Hold These Truths. We hope to see you next week on New Hampshire's Family Radio, WLMW 90.7 FM.